Without trust, society stagnates.
Economies decline.
And businesses fail.
My Security Media believes through security,
trust between individuals,
organisations,
and government can be maintained. Welcome to the
Cybersecurity
Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast. This is Jane Low podcasting from the Singapore Innovation Hub. It's a very happening area, 16,000 square meters of hundreds of startups, innovation hubs, accelerators and VCs amongst others. We are very happy to have Mr. Paul Bermester with us today. He's the head of innovation and partnerships with Singtel Innov8.
Very nice to meet you, Jane.
Thank you, Paul, for joining us today. Good morning. If you could share with our listeners in terms of Singtel Innov8 and the role it plays in the innovation scene in Singapore and also in the region and globally.
Sure, yes. So Singtel Innov8 was established about 8 years ago and is a corporate venture capital fund. So it is the venture capital fund of the Singtel Group. And as such, it was established with a $250 million US fund. And it's what they call an evergreen fund. So the profits from exits go back into the fund. So if you do a good job, then the fund obviously continues to grow. And our job is to identify and invest in what we would call startups, venture capital or privately funded companies around the globe who we believe can in some way assist with the execution of the strategy of the Singtel Group. And that's obviously very broad. And the Singtel Group is quite a massive corporation, operational around the globe, and its traditional telco business, as well as digital marketing, TV and entertainment, cybersecurity, location-based services, esports, and more recently into health tech and fintech. So it's a very broad remit that we're looking at around the group.
I was looking at your very extensive experience. Currently, we have artificial intelligence, blockchain, big data analytics. What is the driver behind the focus on cybersecurity? Or is there one particular?
There is, yes. I mean, the startup industry suffers terribly from fashion and much as you know, most industries and particularly consumer-led industries do. So AI, blockchain, SaaS, cloud-based, they're all very fashionable statements. And I mean, Innov8 meets with over 1,000 startups a year across our offices around the globe. And I think we'd be hard pushed to find one or two that don't mention AI in their PowerPoint presentation somewhere. It's very topical. But cybersecurity is critical today to all walks of life. And it's not a fashion statement. I think it's fair to say it has come to the fore, but it's very much a horizontal. So it applies to every type of company, wherever they are. And so for us, it's a very, very important area of focus right across the Singtel Group.
In terms of the funding strategies then, a particular sort of like early stage, startup, mid-stage, late stage?
Sure. In general, Innov8 tends to focus on Series A and beyond. So you would call that sort of mid to late stage. So that's our natural area of focus, typically looking for companies that are mature enough to engage with the Singtel Group now and also to engage in the regions that we operate in. But we will on occasion go to earlier stage companies when we think it's very, you know, groundbreaking new technology, something of interest that we can very much participate, support and learn from.
So when startups come to you, how do you differentiate yourself versus other funding strategies out there? Like, for example, bank loans or, you know, other alternative financing?
Sure. I mean, in the startup world, they're almost exclusively looking for venture capital of some sort or another. The traditional financial formats of bank loans and things tend not to apply because they require security, which, you know, if you're setting up a startup and, you know, I have a background in that area as well, the concept of, you know, putting up your house as security for a loan and things of that nature is not typical in the startup world. I think the key is venture, as in venture capital. When you start a company, you're starting, you know, starting on a journey, an adventure. And venture capital is very much finding investors who are going to take that journey with you, to support you. It is risky. You know, the nature of venture capital is it's risk orientated. And so it very much outside of the remit of traditional banks and bank loans. Now, if I take a step back to sort of my past lives when I was running startups and looking for funding, I would always say, forget the money for a second. As an investor, what else can you do to help me? And so now in, you know, my my life today as part of a, you know, great venture capital company, we always focus on what else we can do beyond simply investing in the company. How can we help them? So within the team, we're engaged right across the Singtel group to make sure that we understand the strategy, directions, requirements of every element within the group. And then we in turn feed that into our scouting so that when we're talking to these startups, we have in the back of our mind what the requirements are today and hopefully tomorrow for the group. And so we can know how appropriate the startups are. Now, not always the case, because one of the interesting things of innovation is we don't know what we don't know. So we will, of course, discover things that we haven't even thought of before. But in the main, we're looking at technology that very much fits in with the strategy that the company is deploying today and tomorrow. And so if we do agree upon an investment with the startup, we don't just hand over the money and sit back. We very much get involved to see how we can help them. Can we mentor them? Can we introduce them to new customers? Can we be a customer, both as a user and maybe a channel to market for them, a reseller of their products and services? Can we introduce them to other people? And so anything we can do to assist that company in their growth and their journey is very much part of our remit.
Yeah, so you mentioned that money is a secondary objective for startups based on your own experience, and you're looking for other support. So you mentioned mentorships, for example, networking opportunities. What other flexibility does a VC provide compared to a bank loan? Obviously, there's in terms of collateral requirement, there's no need to put up your house. So that gives you an enormous amount of flexibility in terms of how you use the money. What other flexibilities does a VC offer?
Yeah, I mean, every VC is different. And of course, in the startup's life, they're probably taking funding from a whole range from independent, you know, even friends, family in the early days, through to angel investors, individuals, net worth individuals. They may be receiving subsidies from various government entities. You know, countries like Singapore and like Australia have very good support networks run by various government agencies and regional agencies to help startups. And then eventually they fall into the realm of more traditional venture capital or corporate venture capital like ourselves. Just to be clear, I mean, they're not being given the money for free. When you make an investment in a startup, you're generally taking equity in the startup in return for that investment. But obviously, once you become an investor and a shareholder, your goal is to do everything you can to help that company be successful.
That was the other question that I was going to ask you, Paul. So you take an equity stake. How do you determine the percentage that to invest in? Is there sort of like a traditional classic approach to...
No,
there isn't. by case.
Again, you know, every investor is different and every case is very much different. And there is a certain amount of experience and logic that goes into it. You look at the value of the startup, and it's what makes up their value, depending on how early stage. They may have customers, they may have revenue, they may just have an amazing invention, some intellectual property, may be about the brand or the market they're targeting. So there's a whole host of factors. One of the challenges often is that they don't have much history. If they are an early stage startup, you can't look at 5 years worth of historical data because it just doesn't exist. And they might well be doing something that has never been done before. So certainly experience and instinct comes into it. and you look very carefully at the team themselves. Do you believe in this team? Do you believe that this team can execute? Mm-hmm. And can they overcome the hurdles that they will undoubtedly face on their journey?
That was a question I was going to ask you. Like, in terms of due diligence, how detailed do you get into the analysis of future projection of, opportunities?
You get involved as much as you can, but obviously the data is often quite limited.
That's right, yeah.
In an early stage company. I mean, normally there are multiple investors, and so one investor will lead, which means they'll negotiate most of the terms and they'll do most of the due diligence, and the other investors will follow, and therefore they'll accept those terms and accept that due diligence. In the main, I mean, there are many different versions of that. Mm-hmm. And for Innovate, we quite often lead or follow in rounds. Again, it's case by case. But at some point, and time is of the essence, mm-hmm. that startups don't have 6 months or a year or whatever generally to mm-hmm. play around with this. They need clarity and they need support and investment for the path that they're on. So you take as much data as available, you look at market trends, you look at insights, you look at the individuals, mm-hmm. You look at your own experience and instinct, you talk to other experts out there in the field as much as you can, but it's not very much not like a traditional investment of looking at the last 5 or 10 years of data. It's highly unlikely that won't be available.
There's a lot of assumptions behind the, well, not assumptions, but based instinct, I guess, and experience that comes into assessing a startup.
Yes, very much.
And their potential. Yeah. So you mentioned that, you look at the team experience and I guess also the chemistry, how well the team works together, I'm assuming. Hmm. And also the management structure, how they will perform on meeting the milestones, right? And also, obviously, the idea is very important.
Yeah, and, you mentioned the team. That is critical because you don't want any company to be reliant on one person. That's, very much a single point of failure. So you want to see a team that works well together, that can overcome hurdles, that has a nice balance of different skills so they complement each other. So if any one of them does have a problem of any description or decides to leave or something, mm-hmm. the company is not going to fall over. And equally, you mentioned KPIs, but in my experience of the startup world, those will change continually. We see so many companies changing their direction somewhat. They start off with one idea. As they get feedback from the market, as they get feedback from their users, then they start to, in some instances, they'll do what's known as a pivot, which can be quite a major change of direction. But I think pretty much all startups do what I would call very minor pivots, which are really refinements, constant, continual refinement of their go-to-market as they learn, particularly, again, as if they're doing something that's never been done before.
Can you share with our listeners an example or two where from how the scouting process in terms of how you identify the startup to mentoring them, to helping them while they develop their market?
Sure.
And their customer
reach. So we have 5 offices, which is our headquarters here in Singapore. We have Tel Aviv, San Francisco, Beijing, and Sydney. All of those have extremely active startup ecosystems. And then we have partners as well that we work with, which gives us a good view into what's going on in Europe and Latin America and Africa as well. Mm-hmm. So we have a reasonably global view. Startups come to you all the time. So in terms of where we get our information from, it's everything from a startup simply approaching us directly because of our brand, our reputation, through to other investors bringing startups to us. Of course, the more traditional things of attending demo days or accelerators, those tend to be earlier stage. So we would keep an eye on them and put them in our keep in view and see how they progress over the next year or two and until they reach maybe a Series A maturity. So finding startups is not necessarily the problem. There's a plethora of them out mm-hmm. there around the world. And I think most regions now have extremely healthy and mature or maturing startup ecosystems. Mm-hmm. The challenge is obviously sifting through them and finding the right ones. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we go back to making sure we're very close to what the Singtel Group is doing, mm-hmm. And what their strategy and requirements are, so that we can try and identify the right kind of startups to support that. And the benefit then to the startup, as I say, is we're not just giving them money, we're actually then able to help them perhaps enter the Asia-Pacific market if they hail from Silicon Valley or from the Israeli cybersecurity industry. I think a lot of people outside of Asia don't appreciate the market opportunities that Asia offers. Mm-hmm. And if you're a European or an Israeli startup, there tends to be almost a myopic view of I must get to America, I must get to Silicon Valley, without necessarily appreciating the huge opportunities. And so we do a lot of work in those regions to say, you know, to make sure people understand who we are, mm-hmm. and what the market affords them, mm-hmm. here, and why this can be a good place for them to establish, mm-hmm. a footprint, mm-hmm. and really grow into the Asian market.
So I assume that for your office in Beijing or Australia, who obviously know more about the Asian market opportunities.
Yeah, very much. I mean, there is individual familiarity. I mean, I've been fortunate in my life to, you know, have traveled and lived various, mm. places around the world. A lot of my colleagues, you know, share that kind of experience. And so we'll often be able to sit with a startup and say, well, actually, I think your particular products and services might be really well suited to this region, you know, maybe Australia or Singapore or Indonesia or somewhere like that. And equally, it might be the other way around and saying, actually, I think what you're doing is really well suited to Europe or to America, perhaps not appropriate for whatever reason to this region of Asia today or in the future. You remember that in many ways, Asia jumps ahead of some of the so-called, you know, developed countries, mm-hmm. Because of their legacy issues. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the technology that Europe and America has today, or the user experience maybe is a better way of saying it, has been developed over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And so they have a lot of legacy. Whereas when you look at Asia, it's made a quantum leap to mobile, often mobile first, even mobile only. So the mobile becomes people's first access to the internet and their only access to the internet. They haven't gone through the mainframes, the mini mainframes, the personal computer, not carrying that legacy. So in many ways, what's happening in Asia is often ahead, mm-hmm. of certain elements. And that's why we're able to take a very global view, mm-hmm. and know what we believe will work today and tomorrow, and how to guide, mm-hmm. our portfolio companies into the right markets.
Can I just talk a little bit about the exit strategies? And when you take a stake in a company, mm-hmm. do you have a horizon in terms of when you would like to move on to other startups?
Well, I mean, most startups will have something in mind as to their journey. But again, from my own experience, that journey changes constantly. And I think, you know, most founders will tell you that wherever their company ended up, they didn't necessarily foresee that 4 or 5 years ago when they were starting it. So at some point, the investors, of course, would like a return on their investment. Mm-hmm. And that typically is achieved either by floating the company, an IPO of some description, taking that company to a stock market, or because the company is acquired, mm-hmm. Either of those. And you have an idea as where, you know, how long you think, mm-hmm. it might take as an investor and where the most likely, mm-hmm. exit is. But it's never set in stone, and invariably it surprises you. It comes from a different direction and a different time span than you might have originally expected. And of course, it's down to the company you're investing in and their board of directors. It's ultimately their decision. Mm.
How often do you keep in contact with the startups that you invest in? Is there like a sort of a set governance that you put in place?
There are certain elements of reporting obligations. So you would certainly be looking to see regular reporting from your startup to see how they're progressing, how much money they're burning through, how much revenue they're generating, when they're likely to need extra investment rounds if they need them. And of course, your position and engagement with that company can vary dramatically. You might have a board seat, you might have a board observer seat, you may not. You may just have regular reporting information. And then, of course, there are other areas of engagement, as I mentioned, such as business development. Mm-hmm. So many of our portfolio companies we're talking to at times daily and weekly because we're helping them to engage with particular business units in the Singtel Group or partners, go to market. We're helping them grow into a new region. And so just from a business development perspective, we can be talking to them very, very regularly.
Do you find that in this region, the startups tend to be more or less risk-taking in terms of innovation approach, how they view success in terms of the cultural approach towards innovation? How is it different in this region?
I mean, even just something as large or small as this region has massive diversity.
Mm.
I think, you know, the risk profiles that you will see between Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam swing dramatically. There are cultural aspects. I mean, historically, Silicon Valley has been the most famous for the startup ecosystem, and I guess is one of the first. It tends to have the highest valuations, has probably driven the most so-called unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of that is generally a higher risk profile, so you've got, you know, a lot more failures. I think historically, Europe and Asia has been perhaps a little more risk adverse, but that is changing. We're seeing a maturing of those startup ecosystems. And we're seeing certainly more creativity and innovation coming out of them. Whenever a startup ecosystem is created, the first thing they usually do is solve local problems because that's what they're most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very normal. And then once that is addressed, that local ecosystem starts to look more globally.
Mm.
And also some of those founders may have already had their first exit and then they're looking to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll start to see deeper technology, more complex solutions, more global opportunities come out of an ecosystem. And we're absolutely seeing that in this region. And that was one of the reasons that we wanted to be involved in the creation of I-71. The innovation cybersecurity ecosystem here at Block 71 was because cybersecurity is such an important horizontal across all industries. And we weren't seeing a lot of cybersecurity companies coming out of Asia Pac at the time. So there are the traditional regions of Silicon Valley, of Israel, more recently the UK, that have become well known for the creation of cybersecurity startups. And so we wanted to do everything we could to support the creation and the growth of cybersecurity startups, both from this region and also encouraging cybersecurity startups from other regions to come into this region. Since the creation of I-71, we've been really, really pleased with how we've helped grow a number of companies from the region and how we've helped a number of more mature companies from other regions actually establish their cybersecurity companies here in ASEAN.
Is it possible for you to share a couple of projects that you are involved in right now from a cybersecurity point of view?
I'm sure. I mean, examples might be companies like Shape Security, is a US company that we've invested in. They've been very successful in the US and in Europe. Didn't really have a footprint in Asia. And so we've been able to support them in establishing themselves. They've actually set up here in Asia. They've employed their first staff here and are now starting to get out there and sell to the local ecosystem, to corporates and SMEs locally. The flip of that has been a company like SocVue that went through our first accelerator, a cybersecurity company. Mm-hmm. They registered the company here originally in Singapore. They've started growing out into the UK and into the US and started establishing themselves with footprints in those other regions. So we've seen, you know, companies going both ways, mm-hmm. companies that were, you know, established here, mm-hmm. Going out into Europe and Asia, and companies from Europe and Asia coming here into the Asian ecosystem. So that was very much the goal. And they can help each other as well. Mm-hmm. When we see more mature companies, another example might be Digital Shadows. There's a company from the UK who just recently set up here in I-71. It's their first footprint in Asia, employed their first staff. Again, quite a successful company in their original mm-hmm. Ecosystem in the UK and Europe. And so having them here, they actually not only grow themselves and start to sell to local companies and support the ecosystem, but they share with the other startups. Mm-hmm. So by simply mentoring themselves, sharing with the startups how they got to where they are today, mm-hmm. The pitfalls that they faced, mm-hmm. trying to help them and avoid, you know, some of those same pitfalls, what it means to be present in Europe. So helping the Singaporean or the Asian companies actually expand into Europe as well. So that sharing is really important. Mm-hmm. I think it's invaluable on your journey, just mm-hmm. having people around you mm-hmm. who've gone through the same trials and tribulations mm-hmm. and who are able to support you and share with you and be a sounding board.
So on that note, do you organise weekly or monthly sharing sessions where the startups that you are investing in come together and talk about, you know?
Very much so, yes. I mean, I-71 has a very healthy community now. Mm. And I don't know the exact frequency because they're organised around particular people, events, occurrences. But they range from being every week to certainly a few every month. And so we'll be opportunist when we find famous, successful, or knowledgeable mm. people from other parts of the world who are traveling to this region. We will, of course, do our utmost to secure them and get them to come and share and do some sort of speech presentation. We have regular fireside chats from people that go through. We do lots of social networking mm. where people get to meet others mm. in the industry and share. And then we get expert opinions as well. We work closely with the corporates. Mm-hmm. So we'll have CXO forums where corporates will sit down together mm-hmm. in a closed environment so they don't feel exposed. Mm-hmm. And we'll just share with each other the challenges they're facing and maybe some of the successes and failures that they've mm-hmm. experienced. And get the insights from other corporates as well. And then sometimes they'll share that with startups to see if startups can help them solve those problems. So it's a very healthy networking mm-hmm. community that goes on.
It sounds like it's a very happening and a lot of events going on. And you must be a very busy man, Paul. You travel a lot around the region and also globally.
Yes, I mean, as a team, we're traveling a lot, both in support of the startups mm. that we work with and, of course, to source new startups mm. into that ecosystem. So that's a big part of it. Mm. And, you know, we've seen companies come into I-71 now from off the top of my head. You know, I know apart from those from the region, from here in Singapore, we've had them from as far afield as Denmark, America, Turkey, India, Italy, UK. And so, you know, I think most startups these days tend to be born with a I'm going to rule the world mentality. That's generally quite healthy, particularly in cybersecurity, because it is a global opportunity. So we're very pleased with the multicultural mm-hmm. Environment and community that we've been able to build here. And that all goes to help the growth of the local ecosystem because they really benefit from that.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have you with us today, Paul. Thank you very much for your time. And this is Jane Lowe podcasting from Singapore Innovation Hub.
Thank you, James. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.